Fresh off the Battle of New York, the Nets just keep on rolling, even without Kevin Durant. But when will we see Blake Griffin? And is the Nets roster set as it is? Or will the best team in the NBA get even better? Plus, in honor of the Knicks-Nets rivalry, we'll have on a guard that played for both teams. That would be Chris Childs. All that and Carrie's Corner is next on Full Court on Flatbush from the New York Post.
The next stop is Barclays Center.
Full Court on Flatbush.
Flatbush Avenue.
It's the podcast. A New York Post. BK. Most stars in the sky.
The three. It's good.
Brooklyn Nets. Kick them to the sick baseline.
Nets win. Nets win.
So many stars. Brooklyn.
The crossover. Oh, it's good.
Brooklyn Nets on fire. Brooklyn Nets on fire.
Game time.
Welcome to Full Court on Flatbush. I'm your host, Robin Lundberg, alongside my co-host, former Net, number 30, Kerry Kittles. Subscribe to the show wherever you get podcasts, but if you're using Apple, give us a 5-star rating. Write a nice review on Apple Podcasts, would you? New episodes drop every Wednesday afternoon. You can follow us on Twitter, at Robin Lundberg, at Kerry underscore Kittles 30. Former Nets guard Chris Childs will join us later in the show. He played for both the Knicks and the Nets, of course. And Kerry, to that point, do you know how I know that the Brooklyn Nets are a big deal right now?
How's that?
Because other teams treat regular season games against the Nets like it's their championship.
Yeah, you're right about that. And that's what you get, you know, when you have that spotlight on you. Is well deserved for the Nets. What they've been able to do this year, you know, with all these new additions, with these new faces, they've somehow managed to take advantage of all that, right? And so now they're the talk of the NBA. They have high expectations, and they're winning all these games without Kevin Durant on a huge win streak right now, before and after the break. It's good for the Nets right now.
Yeah, they're like on the top of everybody's mind, because, you know, the New York Knicks are having an excellent season. They've exceeded any expectations I could have for them, but I feel like their fan base has celebrated a loss to the Nets like it was a win for the Knicks. And they're constantly saying stuff like, nobody cares about the Nets. And I'm like, oh, word? Then why are you always talking about them? You know, because to me, the Nets are the most relevant team in the NBA right now. When you talk about the amount of time that's been spent discussing them, when you look at merchandise sales, they're second only to the Lakers, obviously the heritage franchise with LeBron James there. They've got three of the top 10 jersey sales this year. The TV ratings are up. Nationally televised games. They are on national TV 20 times in the second half of the season. And the only reason the Knicks were on national TV is because they were playing the Nets.
This is very familiar to me, right? Because when I played for the Nets, it was the same story, right? We came out of nowhere. They're like, who's this Nets team winning all these games? Ah, whatever. All the Knicks fans in New York were like, ah, they're just nothing. Let's just see what happens. And so, look, they're just having this time right now to just not accept what's reality. Right now, the reality is, yes, the Knicks are improving from the previous seasons, and they're in this playoff hunt right now, you know, the bottom of the East in playoffs. But the Nets are the talk of the town, and that's just what it is. They're the franchise.
And no disrespect to your teams, because obviously excellent teams, right? But there is a difference here. Not only are the Nets now in Brooklyn, but when you're talking about the level of star power that plays for this current Brooklyn Nets team.
Correct. Yeah, that's definitely the difference. We didn't have we weren't built around the big three, how this team currently is constructed. But yeah, but the expectations are similar. You know, like they were expecting us, you know, as the season was moving along, oh, this is not a joke. This team has aspirations of making the NBA Finals and winning a championship, and it's the same right now. So in that regard, yeah, you know, it's similarities for sure.
And Kerry, you notice how Robin stirs the pot on Twitter with Knicks fans. He stirs the pot about Randall. He loves to this controversy of the Knicks versus Nets fans and stirring the pot. I know you love it, Robin.
Oh, yeah, no, I can see it on your face. You wanted to hop in there. How is it stirring the pot? What have I said that is inaccurate?
Well, listen, the Randall call I felt could have went either way. Listen, I think the Knicks missed way too many opportunities. That really didn't mean too much in the
bottom line. It was a closely contested game. It was down a stretch. The Knicks lost. So Knicks fans are upset, and then Robin's team, the Nets, won, and so therefore he's, you know, stirring the pot.
I don't think it's a problem that Randall got mad, though. He went up, he had to be restrained. That's just the part of the – it's like, can we talk about Kenyon Martin and holding him back in Carey's day? He had a right to be a little bit mad.
Well, no, he didn't, because it was a travel. But as far as the difference in who you are on the team – there is like a, there's a Draymond Green on the Warriors or a Kenyon Martin on the
emotional.
Nets. Yeah. And when you're the leader of the team, I do feel like I don't want the leader of my team to have to be held back from confronting the rest, but I don't want to be like some old guy. I don't want to see myself become the old white guy, finger wagging the man yelling at the cloud. Right. I don't think it's a big deal. And I get it. It's in the heat of the moment emotion. But I do feel like Knicks fans in general, because I get accused of stirring the pot, are obsessed with the Nets. I mean, I don't think that's untrue. Everything is viewed through this prism of the Nets. Getting close to beating the Nets is the NBA championship. If the Nets are doing well, nobody cares about the Nets. It'll always be a Knicks town. The Knicks finally have a good product. So why is that the discussion?
Yeah, I don't understand that, guys, because, listen, I root for the Nets, too. I'm not in this category because Carey is one of my favorite players. I love those Nets teams. I'm a guy who roots for both. I don't understand why Knicks fans can't just stay in their own lane and they're worried about the Nets. It seems like each side has to worry about the other side. They have a good product. They're they're now under 500. They're fun to watch. Young players. They're rebuilding right. They got a head coach. So I don't know why they can't just let Nets fans have their fun right now.
And the Nets are focused on bigger things, let's be honest. I mean, we could go on and on and back and forth about who
They're
runs
not worried
the Knicks.
About the Knicks at all.
The Knicks fan base is super passionate. It's always going to be there. No one with a brain would dismiss that.
Correct.
But the Nets are on to, the next. And that's Nets world and the championship aspirations. And I feel like they're the clear title favorites. And that's why almost on a weekly basis, it gets a little tough, Carey, because where do we find, what is the hole in this team? What is the flaw? Because you go, all right, well, we need to see Kevin Durant's scan on his hamstring. When's he coming back? Or when's Blake Griffin going to make his debut? Or how could this roster get even better? Would they consider flipping Spencer Dinwiddie given his contract status? These are the conversations that we're having, because you can't really have a conversation game to game, because you look foolish, because this is a team that has a chance to be, when it's fully put together, one of the best ever.
So let's just focus on that, right? I mean, we could talk about, bringing in Drummond before the deadline, all those things. Let's just focus on all the wonderful things that they're doing, leading the league in scoring and, without the leading scorer, Kevin Durant, going to probably take over Philadelphia and become number one in the East and head into the playoffs with definite championship aspirations. I think that's the focus for all of us right now, so just, key in on that. We can nitpick with small things if we want to, but they're getting it done, and they're getting it done at a high level. Their win streak right now is amazing. They have another stretch coming up right now. They're playing 5 out of 6 on the road. We'll see how they come out of that. But right now, it is a wonderful thing to watch and enjoy as a fan now. And I think we should be just kind of focused on that.
Do they have a need, or if you were like trying to pinpoint a weakness, what would it be? Because we spent a lot of time focusing on the defense. All the defensive numbers have improved. You can see it out on the court, the way they've gone to that switching scheme. I've made the case that I think James Harden is a good defensive player. I don't know if that's a controversial statement or not. I feel like a lot of his defensive reputation was based on isolated YouTube clips where one can look really embarrassing because it's a lapse. And he's not a stalwart, don't get me wrong. But when you factor in his quick hands, how strong he is guarding the post, and also his communication on defense, I actually think he's a good defensive player, Carey.
Yeah, he's not as bad as everyone makes him out to be. I mean, obviously, we saw some of the worst in James Harden into some of those years in Houston, right, with the lackadaisical effort, just not being there consistently, just waving at guys as they're driving past him. We'll see a different James Harden, as we've seen thus far with him offensively, make the necessary changes to see the team do well. We'll see the same James Harden on defense as the postseason comes around and as the pressure starts to mount and as the games become more and more meaningful.
Yeah, and also, to his defense in Houston, he had to do so much on the offensive end. That can take away from the defensive end. He doesn't quite have to do as much with the Nets. One of the biggest concerns I actually think Nets fans have is will like Nick Claxton's minutes get too low when the team is full, right? You know, they got a young player that they want to see blossom. It's those kind of things that are the real concerns, not whether you can get to a championship level because they're already there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, you throw Jeff Green back in the lineup and there he is having another great game like he hadn't missed a couple of weeks. You know, Bruce Brown and how he's played. Okay, fine. Bruce's not going to play 25 minutes tonight. Fine, you get in the game and you'll still score 6 points in 7 minutes. It's just like the Nets have figured things out right now. And as a fan now, it's exciting to see Steve Nash being able to push all these buttons with all these guys. The minutes, what's going to happen when Blake Griffin comes back? What's going to happen when KD comes back? Now the front court's going to start to have some more bodies there. Maybe some of the guards lose minutes. So they'll figure it out, and they have the time to do that. And, man, I want to see this team in the postseason. I'm just so anxious to see how they play against the Sixers, how they play against the Bucks in the postseason and have their chances against hopefully making the finals and winning it.
Well, there's your concern right there. Will the fans be in the building in the postseason? We talked about you having to Venmo people for tickets. It seems like price have gone a little bit down. I'm looking Sunday against the Wizards and StubHub. They're around 100-ish. So you don't have to donate an arm and a limb. But my God, when are they going to raise the capacity? And playoffs, will you be able to get in for under a grand? Like, will you be paying rent or will you be paying for Nets playoff tickets? Will you live in a box on 34th Street or go to the playoff game? That's what's going to come down to.
Well, we need to get people vaccines as quickly as the Nets can get buckets. That's what we need. And then you can get some more people into the arena. Because, you know, the rotation, that's what Carey talked about, right? The playoff rotation, that's probably the biggest concern. And then whether you're in the building for the playoff game. Are we going to make it? Are we going to be a big three?
Carey, hook us up. Come on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Your treat?
Yes, we'll figure it out. We'll be there.
This is news to me. Wow, I'm in.
Breaking news, Full Court on Flatbush. We'll be live from the Barclays Center for a Nets playoff game, courtesy, brought to you by Kerry Kittles. we could talk about that part offline, but when we're online, it is fun to talk about this Brooklyn Nets team. And Kerry, you said, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. You said you want to see how they match up with some of those teams. I think they're going to blow some of those teams off the floor. I don't think people are prepared for how good this team may actually be when it's in its fully realized Death Star form. And maybe this clip will get pulled out and thrown back in my face later. I can welcome that, but it's a welcome sight seeing the Brooklyn Nets every night. Their upcoming schedule at the Pacers on Wednesday, at the Magic on Friday. They got the Wizards Sunday and the Blazers, Damian Lillard versus Kyrie Irving. Do you hear my fingers rubbing together? Can I make that sound loud enough? I did a little bit of a clap. That is on Tuesday. But up next, we take you back in Kerry's Corner. All right, we're entering Kerry's Corner where we get some stories from Kerry Kittle's playing days. And Kerry, I'm interested because we talk a lot about the difference between the NBA now and the past. But the other night against the Knicks after the game, Julius Randle, very upset, even though he traveled. And, you know, he had some of his teammates holding him back from going after the refs. How often did you find yourself having to hold teammates back in any situation? And were there any teammates you had to hold back more often than others?
Yeah, and we had him as a guest on our show early on, was Kenyon Martin. He was a very emotionally intense player. And oftentimes that will happen where he would sort of lose a little bit of control. He got better at that over time. But early on, I can remember my first year playing with him was like, whoa, this guy is... He's very intense, and the emotions of a game, sometimes the plays go your way, other times they don't, and you know, you have to kind of get in between so that things don't get out of control. So it's something that professional athletes have to always deal with. There's the emotional toll, right, of being in the moment and all that comes with that.
How often did you have to hold Kmart back?
Not too often, because he was a big dude, and you sometimes didn't want to have to deal with anything getting out of control. And he had a lot of technical fouls and slamming guys to the ground, stuff like that. And it was intense.
Did you ever have, Kerry, any altercation? Now, you're the quiet, soft-spoken guy, but did you see any kind of fights? Like, you know, Junkyard Dog talked about Charles Oakley punching Tyrone Hill in the face before a game. I had Samaki Walker got punched by Kobe. Did you ever see it? Were you ever involved in some sort of fight like that?
No. And that was even rare. You know, in those mid-90s years, that was kind of weaning out of the NBA, you know, those real physical confrontations, you know, altercations on the court. You know, there was a situation that definitely took place after a game in the back, you know, between two teams when I was a part of that.
Can you give us the details? You can't just stop there. What are the details?
It was Kendall Gill had some words with Steve Smith and during the game. And it was basically stated that after the game, we were going to have to settle it. And so after the game, they settled it. And, you know, altercation, pushing, shoving, you know, teammates and stuff. And that was, you know, it was a fight. It was a fist fight that took place. But other than that, it didn't never really happen. I mean, guys understood, right? The fines at that time were starting to really increase. So if you got into a fight, you were going to get heavily fined for it. And guys did not want to lose their money.
Robin, it all makes sense now. Kendall Gill becomes this MMA fighter. He was doing it in the league. Now he got it.
And you notice how casual Kerry was with it? Yeah, it's just a fist fight, you know, just a teammate punching another teammate in the face. not much to make of it. You know, Kerry, fast forwarding to today, we touched on this a little bit last week, I think. And so people have shouted you out as a player who would fit in well in today's game. But Damian Lillard just goes for another 50 piece. You know, we were discussing the All-Star game where those guys are pulling up from. How do you think you would have fared as far as that aspect of the game? Would you be working on your off the dribble threes, your deep threes? And do you think that's something you would do at today's level?
Yeah, I think what you just said is correct. The pace of play has increased so much, right? And now we don't see post-up players anymore. So the game is wide open. So it lends itself to just more threes. And the teams are encouraging to take more threes from everybody, one through five. So you're right. I'd have been working on my quick release threes. I'd have been working on my off the dribble threes. I'd have been working on longer range threes because that's what the game has shown to reward teams that are doing well at that. And so I would have definitely excelled in today's game with my speed. I was always a fast player and I liked the long ball, and I would have fallen in love with it even more if you'd have been encouraged to take more threes, regardless of what you're shooting. I mean, I shot a decent percentage from three, you know, high 30s. Oh, no, you got to get more reps up. You know, these coaches are saying if you're shooting in the high 30s, you should be getting up 7 to 8, 10 threes a game. So that's right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, you shot for your career 37.8% from 3-point range. You shot 43.9% from the field. And you shot 78% from the free throw line. That's unacceptable, Kerry. Got to get that in the 80s. Just unbelievable. I'm curious, Kerry, do you get recognized? You live in New Jersey. Curious now versus then. Do you get recognized when you go to the grocery store in the streets? Did it happen more when you were playing while you were in Jersey?
Yeah, definitely. You know, early on when I played, it was a lot more attention. You know, you're in the spotlight. You're in the newspaper. You know, the games are on television and you're there. You're part of the team. So when I played, it wasn't crazy. You know, I can go to the malls when I played. And I wasn't like mobbed or anything like that. But now it's cool. I enjoy more of this freedom now, moving about and occasional. So, you care, you play for the Nets. Yeah. And so it's not that bad now. It's just a few autographs here, there, some pictures. And, you know, I can still move about my life without having to be disrupted. But when you play, you know, definitely in the New York area where the media is there, the cameras and the lights are on, it can be somewhat cumbersome to deal with that.
But you're saying today you'll be in the produce aisle at the supermarket and Joe Schmo will say, Kerry Kittles, and they'll come up to you and ask a picture next to your, like, your apples and oranges.
It happened last week. I was out with my wife with a mask on, and the guy saw me with a mask on, and like immediately he knew who I was. And I'm like, bro, I don't have any hair. I have a mask on. And he's like, oh yeah, you're Kittles. You play for the Nets. I watched you play. I'm like, oh yeah, that's pretty neat. You can recognize me right now.
No, I like it whenever I get recognized, and it's cool and exciting and everything. But is that kind of rude in the age of COVID to be accosted in the grocery store and have somebody up next to you?
It's not rude. The only time I found it to be rude is when you're having dinner with your family and your friends, and you're out and you're sitting trying to have a meal, and then folks are coming up to the table, and it's like, I get it, right? Like they recognize you, and it's like, you know, you're accessible. You don't have bodyguards around you, you know, preventing folks from coming up to the table. That was a little bit, it got old after a while, but I think now it's fine now.
See, I don't have this problem. I get recognized at the cookie shop and the coffee place for being a high BMI frequenter at these locations.
I thought it was for your stamp card that you get. Once you get the 10 checked off, you get a free one.
Buy 9 anyway, Cinnabons, get one free. Exactly.
We were talking about some on-court and off-court skirmishes. Someone who had a very famous one and who was a member of both the Brooklyn Nets, or the New Jersey Nets at the time. There it is, the Brooklyn Nets slipping off the tongue. And the New York Knicks, Chris Childs, joins us next. We're joined now by a New York guard. He played with the Nets and with the Knicks, Chris Childs, who spent a while in the NBA. And Chris, considering you played with the New Jersey Nets and the Knicks, what are your thoughts around the energy of New York basketball at the moment, with the Nets as, I would say, the title favorites and the Knicks exceeding expectations? How do you feel about just the energy around hoops in the New York area?
I'm just glad it's back. You know, growing up and, you know, coming from California and wanting to, I was always an East Coast fan with the Philadelphia 76ers and the New York Knicks. And to see the success that they've had in the past with Clyde and Willis Reed and then us coming on after that in the early, the late 90s, it's just good for the city. That team in the city has been going through a lot lately with their basketball teams. And it's just good to see that the Knicks are, you know, the young team is playing well, and that juggernaut that the Nets have, it just brings back the excitement in New York City.
Now, you know, you're more identified, I think, with your tenure with the Knicks, but considering what the Nets have become, did you ever think you would see the Brooklyn Nets or the Nets themselves be this blockbuster franchise?
I never thought that the Nets would be in New York. I never thought it because, you know, even back in the ABA, and then I was with the Nets early under Willis Reed and Butch Beard and Stan Auerbach and Paul Silas, and to see them move over to Brooklyn and see the success they've had, you know, within, 10 years, is just amazing. And then the team they put together, when they made that trade to get rid of LeVert, you know, they brought 4 all-stars to the team, so sky's the limit.
Hey, Chris, this is Kerry. What's your thoughts on today's game and the style of play, the pace of play we see every year? It's increasing so much, right, with offense, and less defense. What are your thoughts on that? And also, too, how that identifies with the Nets and their skill sets with their top players?
Well, you know, it's just like anything else. Everything evolves. The game is changing. You know, I don't want to sound like a old veteran player that puts the game down. I think it's exciting for the fans. You have an opportunity to show your skill set to a certain level, all the YouTube videos and the different training methods. So it's exciting. I wish there was, but if you look at all the teams in the last 8 to 10 years, once it's playoff time, defense wins games. I don't care how good your offense is, because you can control, and you know, Kerry, you can control your defense. Sometimes the ball doesn't go in, but are you able to win stopping people? But that's just the state of the game now. It's exciting. It's like any other sport, you know, with baseball, the home runs, they change the ball. So it's exciting for everybody. I'm looking forward to it this year. I want to see if the Lakers and the Nets make it to the finals, and then we'll be able to tell if defense wins games.
Yeah, Robin and I have that discussion weekly. You know, we talk about the Nets. We're so enamored with how much that they're scoring, and we see their defensive numbers starting to creep up and to be more respectable, and that's going to be something that's going to have to be determined postseason, right? Like, can those 3 stars get it done defensively? Because we know those 3 stars offensively, they're going to dominate games. It's so hard to stop them when, you know, you give the ball to KD one-on-one, no one can guard him. You give the ball to Kyrie, he's electric scorer offensively with the ball in his hands. And then Harden, right, ball screens, how he just picks teams apart. You know, their defense is definitely going to have to improve, and we'll see how that pans out in the postseason.
Well, I know when KD comes back, KD is, you got to think top 5 defensively, because he's able to switch. He can guard guards, he can guard forwards, and it's going to be amazing when he's at the 5 position or Blake's at the 5 and they're able to spread the court and, you know, getting rebounds and pushing it. And, you know, when you have 3 guys that you can outlet to and they can create plays and run your offense, that's hard to defend. I don't care how good your defense is, but it will be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to it. The way they spread the court with shooters, penetrators, and then you got, you know, they're deep. I mean, they're like 8 to 10 deep. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think shot creation is the number one thing you can have in basketball right now. And Nets have multiple Mariano Riveras at the moment who can close out games. Now, one guy I want to focus on for a second is Kyrie Irving. I know, Chris, you're a West Coast guy, but you played in the East Coast. You just talked about your affinity for the East Coast. Obviously, playing at the guard role in New York. I think you spend a season next to Kenny Anderson in New Jersey, and you always hear these sort of legends or tall tales about New York City point guards. To me, Kyrie Irving's game, and I know he's from New Jersey, it is every story you've ever heard about a New York point guard. What do you think of that description?
I mean, yeah, that kid is amazing. And he can be from South Dakota. It doesn't matter. His skill set is like no other. Everybody talked about his mental capacity and, you know, the things that he talks about and he believes in. But you got to concentrate on the magician that he is with the ball. And he's not what he's like, 6'2", 6'3". I see 6'5 guys guarding him, and his pace of play and getting to his spot to score is just remarkable. And I don't care about the other things. If you can get it done on the court, if you can make plays, and he was even closing when he was with LeBron. When they were in Cleveland, he was the closer. So for him to continue doing that, and then you bring in Harden, then you bring in Blake, and you got KD, and he's still able to maintain that veracity of being the closer. He's one of the best guards to ever play the game at his size. I don't care if he's from New Jersey. He's an East Coast guy. You know, you don't see a lot of West Coast guys play the way that he plays. He reminds me of a mix between Kenny Anderson, Rod Strickland, and Rafer Alston because of his size, his strength, and being able to get to his spot no matter who's guarding him or what size of guard is guarding him. He's going to get the shot that he wants.
What's the deal? I mean, it's the Nets, right, with this three superstars. If these three guys are healthy, is it a championship or bust season, right? I mean, we know that they're one or two in the East. Their expectations are through the roof. They're dominating against the best teams in the league. They're winning all those games. They're on this, 13 out of 14 game win streak right now, something crazy. Is it a championship or bust season right now for the Nets?
Yeah, they have to win. They have to win the chip. They made all these changes. They got rid of LeVert. They brought in even Blake Griffin. I don't know how they made that happen, but that's four guys, four superstars, all right? And you look at in the East, you got Philly, you got Milwaukee, you got Boston. Boston has two, they have three. I don't know if Kimba is fully healthy with a B going down. I didn't like the Brogdon move from Milwaukee. I thought he was a stable, steady guard that can control the tempo in a big game like that. So I'm not sold on Milwaukee, but the Nets have to win it all because of all the moves they made. And then, you know, playing in that mecca with the media, if they don't win, it's going to be a long summer.
Chris, it's Jake here, and your story is pretty incredible. And your journey to the NBA and then finally getting to the Nets after your time in the CBA and bouncing around some places, you come to the Nets. I'm curious, the life as a Net in the Swamps, and, you know, Carey followed you right after. And then coming over to the Knicks, you go from a Nets team that's a 30-win team that's not getting close to the playoffs to a championship contender, hard-nosed Knicks team, Charles Oakley, Patrick Ewing, all the names. Can you take us through that transition from the Nets to the Knicks?
Well, it wasn't a hard transition because I still had something to prove once I came from the CBA, 5 years in the CBA. So when I went to the Nets with Kenny Anderson there, David Wesley, it didn't matter who was there because I was still hungry. I had something to prove. I still had a chip on my shoulder not being drafted, not playing those first 5 years in the NBA because I thought I was ready. But I was ready as far as my game, but I wasn't ready mentally because I didn't know how to control a game, carry a team, or run a team. So I had to go to the CBA to mature as a point guard. And so when I got my opportunity in New Jersey, I still had a chip on my shoulder. So I used to tell David, and David wasn't there that long, and I told Kenny, if you're not ready to practice, you don't want to guard me, and you don't want me to guard you, because I'm going to get my sleep, I'm going to eat right, I'm not going to hang out at night. I'm coming to practice because at that time, back then, that was in, 93, 94, all I had was a partial guarantee, and that was $75,000. So I had a wife and two kids at the time. I needed more and wanted more. So every day in practice was a game to me. A lot of guys didn't like it, but I didn't care because they were already well-known players coming from prestigious colleges. And so I didn't have the leeway to just go through the motions. I had to prove myself every day. And then when I got to New York, everybody was like, well, are you going to change your style to fit in with the Knicks? No, my style is already that way to play the game. And that's as hard as I can every play. And I had the makeup on the Knicks team with Allen Houston, Larry Johnson, Patrick Ewing. So in Oak, and all I had to do was play hard defense and get the balls to the guys that can score. And that's why I was able to play the years that I played.
You know, your story and everybody's story is always so unique. And to make it to the level that you made it to, unbelievable. Yet you get identified by specific moments. And obviously with you, the skirmish you had with Kobe Bryant. Have you ever done an interview where you haven't been asked about that?
No. No, I haven't. Rest in peace to KB. What people don't understand is that when you're in the NBA, there's going to be a time in your career, whether it's in practice or in the game, that you're going to get challenged. Your manhood is going to get challenged to see where your ticker is, where your heart is. And so that was one of those moments. We didn't have anything against each other. The skirmish was a sign of respect. It wasn't a sign of hate. It wasn't a sign of a dislike. It was a sign of respect. And it was just one of those things, like I tell kids, I tell people that I talk to on podcasts or interviews, we didn't hate each other. We respected each other. It just so happened that at that moment, I felt that I had to prove something, and he felt the same thing. And so there was no ill will towards each other. That's just the way the game was played. I wish it never happened, but it did. And all I can do is tell the story in a manner that it doesn't disrespect his legacy, because he's done so much for the game of basketball, the NBA, the WNBA, AAU basketball, young kids, men and women growing up, and he's given so much back. And so if I can do half of what he did as far as his giving back to the game, then I'll do his name and his legacy justice.
Well said, Chris. And you ended your career coming back to the Nets and playing alongside our host of the show, Kerry Kittles. Do you have memories? It was only 12 games, but any memories going up against Kerry and playing, you know, alongside Jason Kidd and Kerry and Keith Van Horn and such a fun Nets team that went to the finals?
Well, you say Kerry, you got to say Lucius Harris, you got to say Jay Kidd, Kenya Martin,
Todd McCullough,
Richard Jefferson, all those guys. It was an unbelievable team, an unbelievable challenge. You know, I have, you know, two stories. One with Kerry, Byron, and Eddie Jordan. And so Eddie was the defensive mastermind behind that team, all right? And so we're going through 3-on-2, 2-on-1s. And so, you know, I'm going through the motions. So I get the ball, and I'm getting ready, you know, to lay it up, do something fancy. But in my mind, I forget that Kerry's 6'5 with a 7 feet wingspan. And I go up for a layup, and he hands my shot on the backboard and start talking trash. And I'm like, what the waka flucka is? This is 3-on-2, 2-on-1, but it opened my mind to what I believed in. We're in practice, but we're preparing for a game. And every play in practice was high intensity. And I loved it. And my only regret is not getting healthy enough mentally and physically to be a part of that team that went back-to-back finals. People don't talk about that. That's amazing. That's amazing. And so the regret that I have with that is that I could have been that steady backup point guard to give Jay Kidd rest so he can sit down, you know, and not have to play 40, 42 minutes and still be able to bring that same intensity to that team. You know, I had a hairline fracture in my foot. I'm not using that as an excuse because everybody plays hurt. But I didn't do what I needed to do necessary to get myself there mentally with those guys, because those guys were on a mission from day one, whether it was in the training room taping. They're talking basketball, they're talking execution, they're talking plays before plays. And when you have basketball IQ like they had, and everybody think it was just Jay Kidd, I'm talking about IQ down the line, from Kerry to Lucius to Collins, all these guys had great basketball IQ. So that's, you know, they look at the athletic part of that Nets team, but they need to focus on the IQ part of that team. It was just amazing to listen and be a part of the conversations when these guys talked about basketball. So I think about that. I talk to the kids that I train every day about attention to detail and basketball IQ. If you have those two things along with the talent, athletic ability, you have an opportunity to play at the next level. Because look, these guys had three things: talent, IQ, and they executed every time. And to be a part of that team for the 12 games I was there, it was special.
And Chris, I would be remiss not to ask you this question. Being a former point guard, What are your thoughts on the point guard play of today's game? Right, we see these guys now. They are, you know, Hall of Famers: Damian Lillard, Steph Curry. You know, we're fortunate to watch Kyrie here with Brooklyn. What are your thoughts on the point guard and how that position has evolved over time from, you know, being a floor leader or floor leader general when you play to now looking to score, looking to dominate you with being aggressively offensively?
Well, I just know if I was playing, I wouldn't be able to get any sleep. Because every night you have a guy that can go out there and give you 30 to 40 points, depending on the situation. I'm gonna give you the positive, then I'm gonna give you what my insight is as far as how the game evolves. And sometimes the basketball side of it can be warped. There's a lot of guys that played before me and played with me that I feel if they would have played in this era, would be mentioned in the same breath. And two of them, even though they're not 3-point shooters, they still would have scored and did a lot of damage, and that's Rod Strickland and Terrell Brandon. The way they was floor generals, but if they played in this era, I think they would average 30. These guys that are playing now, the things they're able to do on the court and the freedom that they have to do the things on the court adds to their success. You know, back in the day, shooting a 35-footer, you coming out the game immediately, you know. That's not what we do, but that's just where the game is. These guys are stronger, faster. They have access to a lot of more training type things that we didn't have back then. So they're able to have success. They're handful.
And they're more skilled. They're just, let's be honest, they're just more skilled with the ball in their hands than we were.
I'm not gonna agree with that, because when you say skill level, maybe shooting, but some of the best ball handlers ever played a game played in that early late 90s. But the rule change as far as not being able to touch guys gives you more freedom. I remember when I was in Toronto with Dale Curry and Steph, and Seth was there along with my son. These kids were shooting 3-pointers from out of bounds with their left hand. So they were in the gym with their fathers. They were in the gym with trainers at a young age that were training them how to shoot the ball from deep. And what happens when you step out further, you don't have to heave the ball. All you do is snap your wrist more and you get more distance on your shot. So these guys are all great, but I think they've kind of given kids false hope, not false hope, but a mental part of the game to where everybody can't do what Steph does. Everybody can't do what Damian Lillard does. Everybody can't do what Kyrie Irving does. You have to find the way you play the game to play in this league, because if you're not able to shoot the ball from deep in this era as a point guard, or create as a point guard, then it's very difficult for you to make it. You know, Westbrook, being as aggressive as he is not a great 3-point shooter, but his mental ability to attack no matter what, because everybody talked about he can't shoot or he's out of control, but this guy averaged a triple-double. That's amazing to me. You know, I never thought that would happen, because, you know, when we were playing, we heard about Elgin Baylor doing it, but we're able to visualize it and see it every time this kid stands on the court. So as an old school point guard, I would have to get some sleep. If they had 30 in the first half, understand, I'm going to foul out.
Mm-hmm. Wait, you're gonna make them work for it. Yeah, when Oscar Robertson did it, yeah, it did feel like a tall tale. And Chris, we appreciate you sharing the tales of those Nets teams from before, the Nets teams that Kerry played on. And we've got a great Nets team to cover. Chris Childs, a member of the New York Knicks and the New Jersey Nets, we appreciate the time today.
Hey, guys, you're very welcome, and thanks for having me. And Kerry, continue what you're doing, brother. You know, we talked when we were in New York. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed playing with you for the short period of time. You don't get talked about enough because you were a two-way player. You played the game with class. You played the game the right way. You were a great teammate for 12 games. I'm a big fan, and I'll continue to support any endeavor that you're a part of.
Appreciate it, man. And thank you for all that you're doing in your community where you are down in Florida. That's a wonderful thing what you're doing.
I appreciate it, brother. You guys enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thanks for having me.
The next stop is Barclays Center, Flatbush Avenue.
That does it for episode 13, the James Harden edition of Full Court on Flatbush, our Brooklyn Nets podcast from the New York Post. Thanks to Jake Brown and Brian Mungia for producing the show. Subscribe to Full Court on Flatbush wherever you get podcasts, and give us a 5-star rating and write a nice review on Apple Podcasts, would you? For Kerry Kittles, I'm Robin Lundberg. We're back next Wednesday. Stay safe, stay warm, stay healthy, and thanks for listening to Full Court on Flatbush. Let's go Nets!